Evening, one and all. Well, I hope you are all well. You might have noticed yesterday we had a repeat show because I was not around. I went in to have a, just an epidural because I've got back surgery coming up next year. So they'd sort of said, oh, we'll get you through Christmas and everything. We'll give you an epidural, like you have, the pregnant women have sort of thing, injection in your back and stuff like that. Hopefully it'll get me through. Anyway, I went in. And they couldn't get the needle in the gap in the spine. They attempted about 60 times. I tell you, I felt like a dartboard that had a hedgehog thrown at it. It was that bad. I was there for an hour and they tried this needle. In fact, 6 different sets of equipment they used and they couldn't get the blinking needle in. So I never had the epidural. So I've now got to carry on as I am until I get the surgery beginning of next year. But I am here today, and so is my guest. Now, this time of year, coming up to Christmas, there's a lot of little princesses out there that will be wanting things to do with unicorns for Christmas. Now, yes, we know the song about green alligators and long-necked geese, you know, the loveliest of all was a unicorn, and why there wasn't any unicorns, because they were playing silly games and didn't make the ark and stuff like that. But did they really exist? Well, I'm going to find out a bit more about this, because my guest today is the one and only WBJ Williams, or as I'm going to call him, why just call him, do you know what? I'm having trouble. I'm going to call him Walter. That's right. Sorry about that, Walter. Let me get him on the show. Hi, Walter. How are you?
Fine, Bruce. How are you? And by the way, Walter's perfect.
That's fine. It's just me that's having, after yesterday and, you know, and then coming through today. And of course, Monday night, I have my injection booster. So there was me yesterday with a sore arm, a back that it was more like a pincushion, and wasn't all the ticket yesterday. I will tell you that. This morning a bit better, but you know, I'm here. The show must go on, etc. And so that's it. But let's talk about you, because you're sort of in the security, aren't you? The information security, IT type stuff.
Yes, my day job. I serve as the chief information security officer for a large firm in New England, Massachusetts specifically. It's been in business for over 100 years, and it makes a product that pretty much everybody on the planet uses. So my job is to try to make certain that the product itself is secure, that the methods we use for delivering the product to our customers is secure, and so that everybody can trust it. Considering it's used in medical devices, it's used in military devices, but most importantly, it's used to make books, and it's on your computer, your tablet, your phone, and your car. Yes, I am referring to the company's name is Monotype, and I'm referring to the fonts that we use in printed matter. And
indeed, I know very well. Coming from a history of IT, yes, I do know. So 50 years of IT nearly near. So I do understand quite well. So, but I also understand, because the same thing happened to me, that I started writing as a sort of breakaway from what the day was bringing with the other stuff. Is that what happened with you?
It actually started when my daughters were young. They started asking me to tell them stories that weren't in books, to make stories up. And so I started telling a story about a young woman who was asked to help a unicorn.
Right.
And that story became my first published novel, The Garden at the Roof of the World, which is a story of 5 women who attempt to return to Eden to save the life of the unicorn that walked with Eve. And the book did well, continues, it's still in print. I've gotten some really, really lovely reviews from it. And the publisher came to me about 2 years ago and said, Walter, we'd love you to do a companion piece. We know that you did a lot of research into your book to try to make it as accurate to the historical period as possible. Even though it's a fantasy, I did a lot of research for it. So they asked me to turn some of that research into a companion volume.
Oh, right.
About unicorns.
Right.
And you know, that sounded interesting. I gave it a shot, and then the pandemic hit.
Right.
Here I am trying to do research and write nonfiction about something as serious as unicorns. And I can't get to a library because everything's closed.
Right.
So thank God for the internet.
Exactly. Totally right. Funny enough, I noticed that you've got degrees in archaeology and anthropology. While everything's been closed down, I've found that something I grew up watching in England called Time Team is on YouTube, and I've been binge watching Time Team for the last 6 months. I think I'm up to series 18, episode 10. I think I'm right up to now, but I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's really good. It's basically they go to a location, and they have 3 days to do the digging there, and that's it. And it's got a bit of humour in it, it's, I think if you haven't seen it, look for it. It's really good, very, very interesting, and people have sort of second time around been really getting into it, and you know, it gives you a normal person an introduction and an insight into archaeology, and the fact that they only have 3 days to do all this digging, it's very good. But so anyway, so I can understand the binge watching and stuff like that, and in your case, binge studying.
Yeah, I was doing binge studying, and the fun part is I was writing two books. So I was writing The Reality, Mythology, and Fantasies of Unicorns for this one publisher.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why I publish under WBJ Williams is because I also publish or write information security textbooks.
All right.
So I had a contract from CSC Press to put out how to create an information security program from scratch, a different book and a completely different subject than unicorns, during the same period of time. So I'm spending my evenings and my weekends writing two books during a pandemic and having a blast.
How do you do that? Do you sort of say, okay, today I'm going to do the fantasy, tomorrow or this morning or this afternoon I'll take my hat off and I'll start on the... on the hacker site stuff.
I tell you, it was a lot of time budgeting, especially when you serve as a CISO at a company. That's a job that has a lot of time commitment.
Yes, indeed.
And a lot of travel. But what I would do is after the day job was done, which sometimes that was very late.
Yes, I know myself. Yes.
Yeah, I would spend the first hour after that was done, working on the information security book, and then I would take a break, and then I would spend the next hour working on the unicorn book. And when I started, I really didn't know as much about unicorns as I thought I did. And so I found myself having to do lots and lots of research, and thank God for the Boston Public Library and their online access to academic resources like JSTOR. I found myself reading dissertations, archaeological reports, history, mythology, to learn all sorts of things that most people have forgotten about unicorns across the centuries.
I'd have thought that would have been a lot because, as you say, people know unicorns, but they don't know much about them. You know, they know of them, as I said, at the moment, especially little girls, they're well into unicorns, unicorn this, unicorn that, etc. But nobody really knows, and what you found out, obviously, from your studying is how far and back and how much there is about them.
Yeah. It turns out that unicorns, once upon a time, if you'll excuse the expression, were very real. There's a species that went extinct during the transition from the last ice age into the modern era, called the Vasmotherium. Vasmotherium was a distant relative of the modern rhinoceros, huge, as big as a mammoth, and it's unlike the rhinoceros where the horns are on the nose. The horn on the Vasmotherium was right where we placed the horn on unicorn, and it was a single horn on the forehead that rose up from the base of the skull about a meter.
Mm.
And this beast must have been terrifying
right.
to humanity. But we know that humans encountered them. We have a brilliant drawing of an Elasmotherium found in one of the caves in France that they've dated to about 13 to 15,000 years ago. This is the only picture we have of a real unicorn drawn by somebody who saw it. The most recent specimens we have from Elasmotherium in terms of skulls and other bones were found in Siberia about 35,000 years ago. Or they date to 35,000 years ago. They weren't found 35,000 years ago. But this drawing places them well at the dawn of the agricultural era, that they were still
around.
Unicorns around or Elasmotherium around in Europe. And that's just fascinating.
Oh, yeah, because people just don't believe they actually existed. There was such a thing. Everybody thinks it's a myth, it's a fantasy, but it's not, as you say. And I remember something like that, as you said, in Siberia, because they're doing a lot of big digging in Siberia, hundreds of mammoths, and there's actually discussion about them sort of trying to bring the mammoths back using DNA and that, but that's another story.
Yeah, I wish them luck with that, especially if what the mammoths used to eat is no longer around.
Exactly.
That might not end so well. Elasmotherium, if you sit down and read the ancient Greek and ancient Persian descriptions of unicorns, they sound like they're describing Elasmotherium, because they're describing a large, ferocious beast that could gallop like a horse. And by the way, Elasmotherium could gallop like a horse based upon how its bones are structured.
Right.
Yes. And the behavior that describes is very similar to the behavior of a rhinoceros. So when you realize that the ancient Greeks and ancient Persians that were writing these things were doing so just 2,000 to 3,000 years ago, you start to wonder if there was still Elasmotherium around as recently as 2,000 to 3,000 years ago. Now, it's possible that they're just describing something based upon what's been passed down word of mouth across the countless centuries. But maybe it's something that was described from people seeing it.
Right.
And the most curious thing of all is Marco Polo, the bigot he was, the fool he was in how he interpreted the cultures he was encountering, but his descriptions of what he saw are fairly accurate. And when you read Marco Polo's description of, he saw a unicorn, and it's nowhere near as pretty or as beautiful as he had seen in European artwork and described in European writing. This thing was big and ugly, and et cetera. But what, and people have thought for years, he must be describing a rhinoceros. Except maybe he was describing an Elasmotherium.
Exactly, because as you say, people have this, through art history, etc., they have this pictorial of this sort of really nice looking white horse, etc., etc., but it might well not have been, because this, you look at a lot of the other animals that animals today descend on back from that time, and they were totally different, and the people's views of them were different. Well, here we are, that Marco Polo might well have seen stuff. I mean, this talk, he might well have, been landed and developed part of America. He did all sorts of things people did in those days. I mean, as we're learning all the time now. I mean, history is a sort of book that's only just been opened in a way, and we're sort of still looking into it. And, from what you're saying, people's views, it's picked what the artist drew and then what there is in reality.
Yeah, no. If you look at contemporary drawings of dolphins, as an example, for the same period of time in the Renaissance, the Middle Ages, they look nothing at all like the dolphins that you find out in the sea.
Right.
So people would draw from their imagination more so than they would draw from reality. But every now and then you would encounter something that would be potentially shockingly realistic. In medieval drawing and painting, and it's not necessarily animals. It's,
right.
More often social customs and things like that, because that's what they were interested in. They weren't interested in trying to make something look right. They were interested in trying to convey a story.
Yes, indeed, yes.
In the case of the medieval stories of the unicorn, by that point they had completely changed from the ancient stories of the unicorn. And there are ancient stories of the unicorn that we get bits and pieces of, just snippets. There's a from the early Coptic Church, as an example, you encounter a story where, and this is coming out of a Christian community.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus has just died. He's still in the tomb. And the devil sends a unicorn to bring him to hell. And the unicorn gets there, and Jesus is sitting up in the tomb, quite alive. And the unicorn says, who are you that you're dead, but you're alive? And Jesus says, well, I'm God incarnate. And the unicorn flees for its life.
Right.
And that's a far cry different kind of unicorn than the unicorn that we find 1,000 years later, where maidens are going out into meadows, sitting out in the woods, hoping that if a unicorn will come along and put its head in it, her lap, to prove that she's a virgin.
Right.
That during that 1,000 years, you have a huge transition in what a unicorn meant within Christianity. And a large part of that came from unicorns became symbolic of Jesus and the virgin that the unicorn would place its head in the lap of is symbolic of Mary in Christian mythology.
Right.
And so that's a very, very complicated evolution of story that we only have bits and pieces of. So we have moments in time where you can see how that story is changing, but we don't have the full path. The fascinating thing about the unicorn being associated with the devil in the early Coptic Church is you have to take a look at the early Coptic Church was still dealing with the ancient Assyrian religions of Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
This is before the collapse of the Persian Empire, or I forget exactly which one it was at that particular period of time. But the unicorn in ancient Babylon was associated with the goddess Ishtar, who, by the way, is the goddess of love and war. Certainly not a chaste goddess.
That's the god with the horn on its head, yeah? Am I right?
No.
No, I'm wrong. Okay.
No, she doesn't have a horn on her head. Matter of fact, her horn is someplace else.
Okay.
If you read ancient prayers of Ishtar, you'll find a very particular part of a female's anatomy she describes as her horn.
Ah, okay.
And it's not exactly for young children.
Right, I understand.
But, and it turns out that her sister is the goddess of the underworld.
Ah!
So that if unicorns are associated with the devil, it comes from their association with those two, the whore of Babylon, as Ishtar would have been known of in Christianity, and the goddess of the underworld herself, the devil incarnate. And so you've got these traces of a relationship between story and mythology that just extends throughout time. Where the story is constantly being retold and constantly changing in the retelling. And so the Christian community basically took what unicorn meant in the world and transformed it, as did the Islamic community. And in both of them took their inspiration for that transformation from what the unicorn meant within Judaism.
Okay.
The unicorn within Judaism happens to be one of the animals of the tabernacle. It's one of the animals that is associated with protecting and doing honor to the we know them as the tablets of the Ten Commandments, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And excuse me just a moment. I just need to take a quick drink.
Sure thing.
And so to ancient Judaism and medieval Judaism, the unicorn would have been a very, very holy creature, as it was associated with protecting the tabernacle.
Mm-hmm.
And so Christianity picked up on that, as did Islam, and they each went in different directions with that. And so while, yes, you have some dialogue with the more ancient religions in Mesopotamia, you have this entirely new take on what a unicorn was.
Right. And this, I mean, when you started out to do this and to go into, the, like, the, obviously, the reality and, you know, the difference between that and the fantasy, etc., it must have given you, it must have been quite a shock, in a way, you know, to find out all this history that there was, you know, to back to real animals to and go for all the different ways in meanings they have across multiple religions and things like that. I mean, it obviously very interesting, but it must have been, you know, you thought you'd got one sort of thing about stories and you ended up with something totally different.
Yeah, it was quite a shock finding out that there were things about unicorns in ancient Sumerian mythology and ancient Babylonian mythology. It was quite a shock discovering that the unicorn might have existed up until the historical era as a very live creature that maybe even Marco Polo saw. It turns out that people in Tibet bred a unicorn with stopping Genghis Khan from crossing the mountainous paths in the Himalayas.
Really?
And conquering Nepal and India. The legend is that he was taking his army into the Himalayas and encountered a unicorn that bowed to him and did homage to him. And so he understood that he was not necessary for him to conquer India. And so he turned his armies around and went elsewhere. At that point, Genghis Khan would have had Chinese advisors.
Mm-hmm.
And in ancient and contemporary China, the unicorn was a sign from heaven about the mandate of the gods, that you were honored and revered by the gods. And that comes from all the way back to the birth of Confucius, it turns out. A unicorn showed up to let the mother of Confucius know that her son was going to be thus honored.
Wow.
And so to this day, in many traditional Chinese households, you'll find a woman will put pictures of unicorns up in the nursery, hoping that their child, too, will be so honored.
Wow. What sort of response? I mean, is the book out yet? I haven't got
it. The book's been out since September.
Uh-huh.
The funny thing is, I told you about those two books that
yeah.
I wrote. They came out the exact same day.
Oh, no.
Crikey. Which was awfully fun.
Yeah.
And I have no idea about sales. I'm smart enough to not have enough time to check.
Good for you.
So I'm hoping it's selling like gangbusters.
Right.
I have read some of the reviews, because as an author, you always want to know,
right,
did people like the book? And some people have enjoyed the book very much, and other people haven't, and that's okay. You know?
Yeah.
There's one very, very lovely review of somebody who didn't like it, who wanted it written completely differently than I wrote the book. And when I read her review, it's like, you know, that would have been a very good book, but that's not the book I wanted to write.
Exactly. That's funny. Oh, dear. Okay, well, time's going by, so what I'm going to do now, anyway, Walter, is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you and, of course, your books.
Excellent. Well, hello, everybody. Again, I'm Walter Williams. I write as W.B.J. Williams. In terms of my fiction, my nonfiction is as Walt Williams. And you can find me on Twitter I'm on Twitter as at WBJWilliams. Imagine that. I'm also on Facebook, and you can find me on Facebook if Facebook responds here. I'm trying to click through this as we go. Facebook.com/WBJWilliams. You know, it's all about branding. People have to be able to find you, and I'm trying to be consistent. I do have a blog on WordPress, WBJWilliams.wordpress.com. I maintain a website where you can learn about the Gardens of the Roof of the World, that novel I wrote, or the reality, mythology, and fantasies of unicorns, and read all about the blog posts that I wrote about different unicorns across the centuries. But my website is wbj-williams.net, and the blog itself is wbjwilliams.wordpress.com. So I'm out there. You can find me. I'd love to hear from you. I've set up the blog so that if you want to leave comments, you can. God help you. There's also going to be some of my poetry up there. So if you're not interested in the poetry, feel free to skip that to read more about unicorns. And I have posted a lot of things about unicorns up in the blog and up on my website. And, of course, there's a lot more in the book that I post up in my blog and website. The book is illustrated, is in color, and is available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and I'm certain it can be ordered from any place that fine books are sold.
Okay. Well, Walter, thank you so much for being a guest today. It's been really interesting chatting to you. Lots of stuff I never knew before. Of course, we've got to make sure if they're looking for the fantasy stuff, they must look for WBJ Williams, because Walter Williams will take them to something slightly different. But I'm sure they'll enjoy both either way, Walter.
I tell you, Bruce, I've enjoyed the conversation with you, and I wish everybody the most wonderful holiday season, whatever they celebrate, and a joyous new year.
Okay, thank you so much, Walter, for being a guest today. It's been really interesting. Thank you.
It's been a lot of fun, and I wish you a speedy return to health with your back.
Hopefully thank you.
The surgery that you're up for does what you're hoping for, and that you don't look back on a hurt back.
Right, thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, Walter Williams. But if you're looking for the fantasy, as he said, you've got to look for WBJ Williams. Really interesting. The book, I better tell you the title of the book, is called The Reality, Mythology and Fantasies of Unicorns. And learnt a lot there about they were around. There is such a thing based on something almost prehistoric, but it could be that it wasn't that long ago that some of these things disappeared. In fact, they talk, what was the one I was watching, the Tasmanian devil? Yeah, they reckon they're gone, but now they reckon there's a few left. People have seen them. They're the ones with the sort of like striped back like a tiger and a front like a, not Tasmanian devil, it's something else. It's like a tiger thing, but it's striped on the back part and like a, I guess, Stoke Weasley sort of thing on the front part. But anyway, thought to be extinct, been found, people got pictures of them and stuff like that. You never know. You never know what's out there. We discover things all the time in history, as well as mythology, as well as fantasies. Which are the fantasies? Which are the truth? Anyway, very interesting. Well, that's it for this week. I'll be back the weekend with my music shows on Sunday from 5 to 6pm Eastern here on New Visions Radio. We have Those Were the Days, and we're having sort of holiday type music for the next couple of weeks before we go back to our themes. And then after that, of course, from 6 to 7pm, we have the Swinging 60s, music from the 60s. And I will try and get some of the holiday stuff in. Last week wasn't that easy, but I'll see what I can do for this week. Anyway, we'll sort something out. But that's it. And then next week, I'll be back with a couple more guests. Well, until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget. Make sure it's working.